The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 2, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Book of Tobit. Episode 2, The Amateur Mendicant Society. The radio programs featured in this audiobook were written by Edith Meiser, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by Basil Rathbone as Sherlock and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Charles Knox Manning.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. And now let's drop in on the good Dr. Watson, who's waiting for us in his California ranch house. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Foreman. Come in and make yourself at home.
Thank you, Doctor. Sitting here with the lights off, I see. Have you been getting yourself in the mood for tonight's Sherlock Holmes story?
No, my boy, I was watching the sunset. It's quite a beautiful tonight.
Aye, Doctor, the sun set over an hour ago.
Yes, I know that, young fellow, my lad, I know that. But at my age, a fellow's entitled to take a little snooze after dinner, isn't he?
Of course he is, Doctor. And now that we've settled that, how about tonight's story?
Well, a very beautiful girl figured prominently in this adventure, Mr. Foreman. Her name was Jasmine Lafleur.
Huh? You say that again, Doctor, please?
I know, my boy, but that was her stage name. When she was a magician's assistant, unfortunately, I never had the opportunity of seeing Jasmine Lafleur in the theater. But I'm told that she was a fascinating figure in tights and spangles. When Holmes and I first met her, however, she was dressed a little more conventionally. And her name was then Diana Venering. Lady Venering.
Lady Venering? Say, those tights and spangles really paid off, didn't they? Well, how did you and Sherlock Holmes come to meet up with her, Doctor?
In rather spectacular style, Mr. Foreman. Miss Lafleur became something of a femme fatale in the early 1900s. First of all, she married Signor Rossoni, the magician for whom she was working. On the wedding night, he was mysteriously stabbed to death. A few months later, Madame Rossoni, very fetching in her widow's weeds, I'm sure, met Sir Wilfrid Venering, and after a whirlwind courtship, she married him.
Don't tell me he got murdered, too.
He did, Mr. Foreman, also on the night of the wedding. But this time the police found a suspect. It was a certain Major Beckworth, cousin of the dead man, and an ardent suitor of the fair Diana. The trial at the Old Bailey was one of the most sensational I ever remember. Sherlock Holmes and I, in court on the closing day as a jury, were still considering their verdict. Holmes, the jury's been out over 8 hours. I bet you they can't agree on a verdict and there'll be a new trial.
I think not, old chap. Look, here they come now. You know, there's a strong moral probability of guilt, but I'm sure they'll agree that there's insufficient evidence to convict.
Oh, perhaps you're right. Just look at Lady Venering down there ahead of us. What a stunning woman.
Yes, and a woman of great poise and courage.
Here it comes.
Gentlemen of the jury, have you arrived at a verdict?
We have, my lord.
How say you? Do you find the defendant guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Exactly. Come on, Watson. Let's get a breath of fresh air.
Well, I was wondering perhaps we shouldn't go over and congratulate Lady Venering.
On what? The fact that her husband's murderer has not been found?
Oh, I suppose you're right.
You ever read the Book of Tobit, Watson?
Tobit? I don't think so. When was it published?
A little before our time, old chap. It's an Old Testament story.
Whatever made you think of it at this moment?
Well, it's so remarkably apposite with the case of Lady Venering. It deals with a highly peculiar series of murders, 7 of them, if I remember correctly.
Who was the murderer?
A jealous demon by the name of Asmodeus, who strangled husbands on their wedding nights.
Well, judging by the verdict just now, Major Beckworth isn't the Asmodeus, or whatever you call him in this case.
Here, our boy, here. Give me a paper.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. Paper!
Paper! Well, Holmes, what does it say?
Oh. Here we are. Listen to this. Lady Venring, widow of the murdered man, says that she will marry the suspect. Lady Venring told newspaper reporters this afternoon that if Major Beckwith is acquitted, she will marry him before the year is out.
Oh, from my soul, Holmes, there's a positive sparkle in your eyes. You read about her.
I must admit the lady fascinates me, old chap. I hope before she becomes involved in any further tragedies that we may have the opportunity of meeting her. And something tells me that we will.
Sunday papers are certainly having a field day over the Venring case, Holmes. Did you read them?
No, I didn't watch them.
There's a complete life history of Lady Venring in one of them with photographs. It's rather interesting.
Really?
What are you doing over there, Holmes?
Looking out of the window. Ah, yes, yes.
You expecting anybody, Holmes?
No, come over here, old fellow.
Oh, it's a clergyman.
Yes, a very agitated one. The way he's pacing up and down, and looking up at our window, too.
Joe, what eyes.
Yes, there's a fanatical look about him, which suggests either the martyr at the stake or the inquisitor lighting the faggots.
Mrs. Hudson's letting him in now. Well, I'll be interested to know what he's come to us about. I can hear footsteps on the stairs. I'll go and have a look. How do you do, sir? Come along in, won't you? It's all right, thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
You're Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
I am, sir, and this is my colleague, Dr. Watts.
My name is Whalen, the Reverend Arthur Whalen.
How do you do,
How
sir?
How do you do, sir?
Sit down, would you, and tell me what I can do for you.
Well, thank you. Mr. Holmes, this is a very difficult subject to broach. In fact, it's only after intense personal conflict that I've been able to force myself to come to you. May I ask you, are you familiar with the Book of Tobit?
Book of Tobit? Gracious me. You were talking about that yesterday, Holmes.
I see that you've come to consult me about the Venring case.
But that's amazing. How did you know? Has Lady Venring been in touch with you?
No, sir, but I'm familiar with the Book of Tobit. And Lady Venring's case closely resembles that of the woman Sarah in the Old Testament story.
More closely than you realize, Mr. Holmes. Did you know that before each one of Lady Venring's husbands was killed, they received a threatening note?
Yes, I recall that from the trial.
Signed in some sort of gibberish, weren't they, sir?
No, Doctor. Yesterday I was permitted for the first time to examine one of these notes. The apparent gibberish was in reality ancient Hebrew writing.
Indeed. Were you able to translate it?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. In effect, it said, if you go through with this marriage, your hours are numbered. And it was signed Asmodeus.
The name of the jealous demon who strangled husbands in the Book of Tobit.
Exactly.
Just why have you come to me, sir?
I want you to talk to Diana, to Lady Venring, to tell her she must not go through with this new marriage. Murder is stalking her, Mr. Holmes. I have argued with her, prayed with her, implored her to realize her danger. But she is adamant.
I'm afraid I should feel extremely presumptuous in giving her my advice.
No, Mr. Holmes. I have prepared the way for you. You could, I'm sure, make her realize her danger.
And she's willing to see me, you say?
Willing and anxious.
Oh, very well. But I'd like to ask you a few questions first.
Anything, Mr. Holmes.
What is your interest in art?
She's a member of my flock. She needs my guidance.
Nothing further?
No, Mr. Holmes.
I believe that you performed the marriage ceremony at both of her previous weddings.
Yes.
Are you proposing to officiate the ceremony if she marries Major Beckwith?
Well, I don't know. I'm hoping that marriage will never take place. And so I want you to help me, Mr. Holmes.
Where does the lady live?
47 Berkeley Square.
Very well. Dr. Watson and I will call on her this afternoon.
Delighted to.
I doubt if I can be there myself. In fact, Diana might speak more freely if I'm not. Yes. But here's my card.
Oh, thank you.
You know where to get in touch with me if you want to.
Very well, sir.
Good day to you, gentlemen. And I'm greatly in your debt.
Good day. Strange business, Holmes. I can't believe that Mr. Whalen's motives are entirely impersonal.
Nor can I, old chap.
What are you laughing about?
I was thinking of the Book of Tobit, Watson.
Huh?
In that, the role of protector, the role I had just been asked to take, was played by the Archangel Raphael. I can't help feeling, Watson, that I'm making distinct strides in my profession.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I'm so glad to meet you.
How do you do, Lady Venring? May I introduce my old friend, Dr. Watson?
How are you, Dr. Watson?
I'm awfully glad to meet you, Lady Venring.
Let's sit down, shall we? You're just in time for tea.
Thank you. You know why we're here, of course.
Oh, naturally. Mr. Whalen came round here as soon as he'd left you. You're to persuade me to look after my mortal affairs while he takes care of my immortal ones. Isn't that it?
He takes care of them as charmingly put, Lady Manning.
May I say, Mr. Holmes, that I'm flattered that a man of your eminence should be sufficiently interested to bother about me.
You underestimate your own importance, Lady Venering. Though I may mention that if your problem had been as simple as Mr. Whalen made it out to be, I might have been otherwise engaged.
For being very frank and a little mysterious. Are you suggesting that Mr. Whalen didn't tell you everything?
I am. And I hope you will be more candid with me.
Sherlock Holmes, I like you. You're most refreshing. Milk and sugar in your tea?
Just milk, thank you.
Here you are. How about you, Dr. Watson?
Oh, just the same way, please. Hey, thank you, my dear.
And now, Mr. Holmes, perhaps you'll tell me why you think that you haven't been told everything.
Before I answer that, Lady Venering, I wonder if I might ask you some questions.
But of course. Anything.
When your first husband, Signor Rossoni, was killed, did the police find any suspects?
Yes, one. Ferdinand Gautier, a young man who had been an assistant in our magician's act. A stupid, good-looking boy who thought he was in love with me. But of course, Inspector Lestrade had to release him. There was no evidence.
Inspector Lestrade, well, you can bet that if he arrested him, the boy was innocent.
A warning note was found among your husband's effects, wasn't it?
Yes. And it was signed in Hebrew with the name Asmodeus. But perhaps you're not familiar with the Book of Tobit.
Oh, yes, yes, I'm familiar with it, Lady Venering. How did you know then that the Hebrew letters signified that name?
Mr. Whalen translated them for me.
Oh, I see.
And also read me the Book of Tobit. He's always been particularly fond of that book. Perhaps because it illustrates his own ideas on the dangers of marriage.
Holmes told us that he hadn't seen one of the warning notes until yesterday.
Precisely. Lady Venering, I read in the papers that you intend to marry Major Beckwith, the man who has just been tried for your late husband's murder.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
When are you going to marry him, may I ask?
When it pleases me.
Doesn't it occur to you that a great deal of comment will be caused? Also that Major Beckwith's life is in obvious danger?
Of course it occurs to me, my dear man. But because of two tragic marriages, am I to spend the rest of my life alone? As Mr. Whalen would have me do. I'm young, alive. Peter, what are you doing here?
I just arrived back in England today, Diana. What's this I read about you marrying Beckwith?
Peter, I have guests. Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. This is Peter McComas, one of our most promising young painters.
Diana, tell me it isn't true. When I left England, you loved me, and I you. I come back, and what do I find? You're planning to marry Beckwith. Well, I won't stand for it. If you think you can throw me over like some silly boy, you're very much mistaken. I can tell things, you know. I can tell lots of things.
Get out of here, Peter. Get out.
Diana.
And don't come back until you've learned manners and discretion.
But Diana...
Get out. I'm sorry, gentlemen. Were there any more questions you wanted to ask me, Mr. Holmes?
One, Lady Venering. Where is your fiancé, Major Beckwith?
He's upstairs. I'm letting him stay here until the scandal of the trial has died down.
I must see him at once.
At once? Why, Holmes? He's in no danger until the marriage takes place?
The marriage has taken place, Watson, unless I'm very much mistaken.
What makes you think so, Mr. Holmes?
You're much too discreet and intelligent, Lady Venering, to let him stay here in your house unless you were already married.
We were married this morning. But we planned to keep the fact a secret for a few months until the scandal had died down.
May I talk to him, please?
Of course. I'll ring for the butler and ask him to come down.
May I ask, madam, who married you?
The Reverend Arthur Whalen, of course.
Oh, and all the time he talked to us today, he knew perfectly well this marriage had taken place. He must have just come from it. I don't trust that man, Holmes.
Oh, there you are, Hudson. I just rang for you. Will you ask Major Beckwith?
Excuse me, lady. I was just on my way to telephone the police.
The police? What do you mean?
It's Major Beckwith, milady. He's been stabbed to death in his bath.
Mr. Beckwith murdered, too.
Hodgson, I'll telephone the police. By now, I'm rather well acquainted with Inspector Lestrade. Excuse me, gentlemen.
What a dreadful business, Holmes. Her third husband murdered on his wedding day.
But what a woman, Watson. She's superb, magnificent.
What on earth do you mean, Holmes?
What courage. What unconquerable spirit in the face of a fresh tragedy. Watson, she fascinates me. I haven't seen such a splendid female since we solved that case for the King of Bohemia.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
And now back to tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure. The famous detective and his old friend Dr. Watson have become involved in the affairs of thrice married Diana, one time magician's assistant. Each of her husbands has been mysteriously murdered on his wedding day, the latest murder occurring on the same day that Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson are brought into the case. As we rejoin our story, it's a month later, and for some obscure reason, Sherlock Holmes seems to have lost interest in the case, though not in the beautiful Diana.
Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Lestrade?
It's over a month now since Major Beckwith was murdered, and we haven't found a single clue to it.
Do you expect me to supply the deficiencies of Scotland Yard?
Well, it's unlike you not to help us, Mr. Holmes. And after all, you and Dr. Watson were in the house when it happened. If you ask me, the murderer's either McComas, that Irish painter, or the clergyman Wayland. What do you think, sir?
As far as I'm concerned, the case is closed, Lestrade, and I wish you'd stop bothering me. What do you think I am, nothing but a detecting machine?
Mr. Holmes, whatever's come over you?
Holmes, you're not going out again this evening, are you?
I'm afraid so, old chap.
Well, this will be the fourth night in a row. I was hoping that we might have a nice, quiet evening in front of the fire.
Oh, I'm sorry, Watson, but I promised to take Diana to the horse show at Olympia. I should be home by midnight.
Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Mr. Whalen.
You're seeing altogether too much of Diana. She seems to be completely under your spell.
But you introduced me to her in the first place with the request that I keep an eye on her.
I made a great mistake. As her spiritual protector, I'm afraid I must ask you to stop seeing her.
I'm afraid I must ask you, sir, to mind your own business.
I say, Holmes, have you seen the paper that violinist, the Zywie, is playing at the Albert Hall tonight?
No, I haven't looked at the paper today.
Oh, I thought perhaps we might go along and see together.
Oh, I'm afraid I can't hold you up. No, I'm taking Diana to the French Maid at Delius Theatre. I hear it's a charming musical comedy.
Here, Holmes. We've been friends for a good many years now.
Very true, old fellow.
And I think I'm entitled to speak to you straight from the shoulder.
Of course you are, Watson.
Very well, then. This Diana Beckwith.
Oh. Well,
yes, it's your own business, I suppose. But I can't bear to see her making such a fool of you. You've neglected your work in Paris since you met her. You get about as though you're a young fellow of 20. What's come over you, Holmes?
Stop pacing about, old chap, will you, and sit down. In fact, it might be a good idea if you fortified yourself with a nip of brandy from the Tantalus there. What I'm about to tell you may be something of a shock. Watson, Diana and I are getting married tomorrow.
What did you say, Holmes?
I'm getting married tomorrow.
But you're insane.
Oh, that's not very flattering, Watson. Anyway, I don't see why you should be so surprised. You yourself married and left Baker Street once, didn't you?
But you, Holmes, a confirmed woman.
Oh, no, my dear Watson. No, indeed, no. You will remember in our adventure that you titled A Scandal in Bohemia, I met a lady that I have often referred to as the woman.
You mean Irene Adler, but she was a criminal.
Exactly, and yet Diana has the same magnificent characteristics. Keen intelligence, courage, and unconquerable spirit.
But Holmes, three of her husbands murdered on their wedding nights. You're proposing to be the fourth.
Oh, rubbish, my dear fellow, because tragedy has attended her previous marriages. Is she to go through life alone?
Holmes, you really mean it, don't you?
Of course I do.
I think I will have a nip of brandy.
Oh, don't take it so bad, old fellow. We'll continue to see a lot of each other. Diana's very fond of you, you know.
Oh, well, I'm glad. Who's going to perform the ceremony? Not the Reverend Mr. Whalen?
Oh, no. We decided, in view of Diana's previous marriages, that he might prove to be a trifle, unlucky. A clergyman named Vernet will officiate. Whalen, of course, insists on being present just the same.
What time is the wedding tomorrow?
2:00, old fellow. Oh, I should have mentioned this before. I hope your cutaway coat and top hat are in a good state of preservation. You'll be a pretty prominent figure at the ceremony, you know.
You mean that...
Well, I mean that if Sherlock Holmes gets married, who else can be his best man but his old friend, Dr. Watson? It's elementary, my dear fellow, elementary.
I now pronounce you man and wife. And those whom God hath joined together, let no man put asunder.
To claim the privilege of the best man and give you a kiss.
Of course you shall, Doctor.
Thank you, Holmes. You're a devilish lucky fuller.
Of course I am, old chap.
Sherlock, I'm going upstairs to change my dress now.
Very well, Diana. I'll be up shortly.
I'll see you later, Dr. Watson.
Very well, Mrs. Holmes. Holmes, I never thought I'd live to say that.
Watson, old fellow, I'm worried.
Worried today? Oh, my dear fellow, what's the matter?
Well, just before the ceremony, I received one of those warning notes signed by Asmodeus.
Oh, you better be careful, Holmes.
I think I'll slip out and have a pipe or two on the matter. Yes. Look after my guests for me, will you? And keep your eyes open and your ears.
Yes, I will indeed. There you are, Mr. Whelan. Would you care for a glass of champagne or a punch or something or other?
Thank you, no, Doctor. I'm in no mood for celebration. I'm certain that Diana has made a shocking mistake.
Well, really, sir, I don't think...
I only came here in a last-minute attempt to dissuade her. Now that I've failed, I shall leave. Good day, sir.
Yes, sir. Oh.
Dr. Watson?
Oh, hello, McComas.
Where's Mr. Holmes?
We'll be back in a few minutes. Would you care for a glass of champagne, sir?
Well, thank you. I should like to drink a toast to the pair. I've been in love with Diana for years, you know, but she wouldn't marry me, and... Well, I suppose I might as well make the best of it. I must say, your friend Sherlock Holmes seems like a splendid fellow.
He is indeed, McComas. In fact, I may say...
Watson!
Excuse me, sir. All right, Holmes, I'm coming.
Up here.
What is the matter, Holmes?
Follow me. Lock the door behind you.
Allow me to introduce you to the demon Asmodeus, Watson. Unfortunately, at the moment, she's in a faint.
Good Lord. It's Diana.
Exactly. Always an impetuous woman, she made the mistake of trying to stab me with that knife. So I bent over to strap up a suitcase. She didn't allow for the wall mirror in which I was watching her.
You mean you suspected her all along?
Of course I did, old fellow. The problem was to find the proof. I first suspected her when I knew that she had been a magician's assistant. The key to the profession of magic is misdirection, and these murders have been a perfect example of misdirection motive.
How do you mean, Holmes?
Well, by creating Asmodeus, thanks to the well-meaning stories of... the Reverend Mr. Whelan, whose theological libraries, she must have copied the Hebrew signature. She focused the murders on jealousy, concealing the fact that the one person with a perfect motive was herself, the widow who was to inherit.
Oh, why hasn't she been caught before?
Because she was clever, devilishly clever. She left no clues except an indirect one that I had once spotted, that the likeliest person to be able to approach a bridegroom unsuspected and stab him is his bride. Now I wish you'd see if you can revive her, old fellow. When the police get here, I should like Mrs. Holmes to be in full possession of all her faculties.
Well, Holmes, I must say I never expected to be driving back with you to Baker Street on your wedding day. I can't tell you how happy I feel.
Dear old Watson, you really thought that I deserted you, didn't you?
Oh, naturally. I wish you'd told me the truth.
Why couldn't tell anyone? Not even you. If the faintest shadow of suspicion had entered her mind, I'd never have caught her.
Well, it seems to me you paid a pretty high price, Holmes. You told me you made a will in her favor. Supposing something happens to you before her trial, she'd get the money, you know?
Oh, the will? Oh, no, that was worthless. I told Diana... But it was a holographic will and perfectly valid.
Well, what on earth is a holographic?
A will drawn up in one's own handwriting on a piece of perfectly plain paper. Such a document is quite legal, but I drew mine up on a paper with a letterhead. That made it invalid.
Well, I see, but the fact remains that you are married, Holmes.
I really fooled you completely, didn't I, Watson? Didn't the name of the clergyman who married us suggest anything to you?
The Reverend Vernet? No, and why not should it?
Well, Vernet was a French painter of some note. He also happens to have been a great uncle of mine and, Mycroft's.
You mean that your brother Mycroft was a clergyman?
I mean that Mycroft was disguised as a clergyman. And a very convincing job he did, too. A more satisfactory clergyman than the Reverend Mr. Whalen, no doubt, whose possible complicity may compel him to answer some very awkward questions.
Then you're not married. Upon my soul, Holmes, I don't know what to say.
Then I suggest that you say nothing, my dear chap. Let's just sit back quietly, as two good friends can, and brood about the mutability of human affairs.
Well, Doctor, tonight's adventure was really a little extraordinary, to say the least. Holmes sure had a narrow escape.
Doubly narrow, Mr. Foreman, doubly narrow. He not only escaped the jaws of death, but he also escaped the clutches of matrimony. Actually, the story had a happy ending for everybody but Lady Venering. Jasmine Lafleur.
Well, what about that artist fellow, McComas? How did he take it?
Oh, very well indeed. In fact, in gratitude, he even painted Holmes' portrait. Not exactly a good likeness, though. One of those modern artist who paints his impressions of a person rather than a portrait.
What do you mean?
Well, now, let me see. If he were to paint his impression of you, you'd probably end up by looking like a bottle of Petri wine in a sports jacket.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is based on an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of Shoscombe Old Place. This is Bill Foreman saying goodnight for the Petrie family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System. This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petrie Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And now for our weekly visit with the genial Dr. Watson. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Foreman. Come in and settle yourself down.
Thank you. You're looking particularly comfortable tonight, Doctor. Feet up on the sofa and the puppies asleep on your lap.
Yes, my boy. The three of us went for a long walk on the beach this afternoon. And Monty and Winnie had a running battle with the seagulls. In consequence, they've been fast asleep ever since we got home.
Well, I hope you're not too tired, Doctor. I'm counting on a new Sherlock Holmes story, you know.
No. I'm all ready for you, Mr. Foreman. In fact, I was going through my notes on the case just before you arrived.
Well, last week you told us it concerned a strange society who held their meetings in an underground vault of a furniture warehouse.
Yeah, that's right, my boy. Now, down, Winnie. Get down, Monty. No. Down. The story really began one stormy November night in 1887. I was married at the time and living away from Baker Street. On this night in question, my wife had already gone to bed and I was nodding in front of the fire over one of Clark Russell's fine sea stories. I'd had a very tiring day, I remember. It was about the hour that a man gives his first yawn and glances at the clock, when suddenly my front doorbell jangled discordantly. Oh, our servant Edna had gone up to bed, so I crossed to the window and opened it. It was very dark, but I could just see the outline of a figure standing on my doorstep. It looked like a woman. Suddenly, a cultivated voice called up to me.
Is the doctor in?
Yes, madam. I'm the doctor.
Then please come at once. It's a matter of life and death. I have a carriage waiting.
Gracious me. All right. I'll be down immediately. I closed the window, scribbled a note to my wife, grabbed my coat and hat and my bag, and a few minutes later, I stepped out of the front door and closed it behind me. The carriage was standing at the curb, but I couldn't see any trace of the lady who'd called me. The only person in sight was an old and repulsive-looking beggar woman, dressed in rags and tatters. After a moment of bewilderment, I spoke. My good woman, did you see a lady leave here a moment ago?
No, Doctor, she didn't leave. She's still waiting for you.
Oh, forgive me, madam, but clothes are yours. I thought you were a beggar woman.
There isn't any time to discuss that now. Please get in this carriage.
Mm-hmm. But where's the driver?
I'm going to drive. Please get in.
Very well. It's only business. Are you sure that you can handle those horses, madam?
Of course I can.
Oh, Well, would you tell me the way you're driving, ma'am?
Please don't ask me any more questions, Doctor. You'll find out soon enough.
Thank heavens we've finally reached our destination. Must have driven halfway across London. Oh, hello, hello. Must be somewhere down near the river. No dwelling places here. Nothing but enormous warehouses. Why have we stopped here, madam?
Well, this is where we're going. Please follow me down these steps.
I wish you'd tell me where you're taking me.
We have a club here in the basement. You'll see for yourself in a moment.
It's a very solid-looking door. How do you propose to get past it?
I'll show you.
The floor, it must be a very secret club of yours, madam.
It is, Doctor.
Who knocks?
Number 7.
Give the password.
To the lanterns.
You may enter.
Follow me, Doctor.
Madam, I do wish you'd tell me where you're taking me. This looks like the entrance to an opium den or a thieves' kitchen.
Don't worry, Doctor. You're in no danger. There. Does that look like a thieves' kitchen?
Great Scott, I don't believe my eyes. A luxuriously furnished room. What a strange collection of people. Some look like beggars, others in full evening dress. Amazing.
Number 7. Who is this man?
He's a doctor. I went to fetch him.
I thought I said there were to be no strangers inside.
Now look here, my good man. I've been extremely patient, but my temper's beginning to wear a little thin. Either let me see your patient at once or show me out. My time's valuable and I don't propose to waste it.
I'm sorry, Doctor. Where is Julian?
He's in the back room. And if you know what's good for you, Doctor, whatever you call yourself, you'll forget everything you see in here.
Stop threatening me, sir. I'm not the least interested in your blasted club. Just take me to the patient.
This is the man we want you to examine, Doctor.
What happened?
He fell down the stairs leading into the club room.
Well, why'd you move him?
We wanted him to be comfortable.
It's the worst thing in the world you could have done. Never move a person with an injured skull.
Is he going to be all right, Doctor?
No, madam, I'm afraid he isn't. His neck's broken. He's dead.
Huh?
Julian, dead.
You sure of that, Doctor?
Of course I'm sure of it, my good man. I'm afraid you need an undertaker, not a doctor.
We must tell the others. All right, quiet, everybody. Quiet.
Yes, sir.
Quiet. Julian is dead.
Julian dead. Oh, this is terrible. Who is this man?
He's a doctor.
We'd better get him out of here at once. We don't want any strangers nosing about.
That's right. No. Shouldn't have brought him here anyway.
Now, just a minute. I assure you, ladies and gentlemen, I haven't the slightest desire to stay here one moment longer. If you'll direct me to the door again, madam, I'll try to find a cab myself in this godforsaken district and go home.
Show him out and give him his money.
Follow me, please.
I'm delighted to.
Do you mind if I don't drive you home, Doctor?
No, I should prefer it. My nerves aren't in the best of shape.
You mustn't be angry with me, Doctor, please.
Leaving again, number 7.
No, but this gentleman is. Will you see if you can find a cab for him?
Right.
To whom shall I send in my bill, madam?
Oh, here's a £5 note. That should cover your time and trouble, shouldn't it?
No. It's far too much, madam.
No, Doctor. It's late at night, and it hasn't been a very pleasant case for you. Please take it.
Oh, it's very kind of you. Very generous indeed. But by the way, how did you happen to come to me in the first place?
Well, I was driving about looking for a doctor, and a policeman directed me to your house.
Oh, I see.
I have found a cab for you.
Well, thank you, my man. Thank you.
Oh, Doctor, may I come round in the morning for a death certificate?
Of course. You remember my address?
Yes, but I don't know your name.
Watson. Dr. Watson.
Dr. Watson? Not the Dr. Watson who's associated with Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, madam, that is that you know of me.
Good night, Doctor. And please forget about everything you've seen here tonight.
My soul, what an amazing business. Holmes will be interested to hear about this. And that's the way it was, Holmes. One of the most curious adventures I ever had without you.
Very interesting, Watson. You say this underground cellar was luxuriously furnished.
Yes, and the people there were an amazing mixture. Some were in rags and some in evening dress.
Oh, like the nursery rhyme, eh? Some in rags and some in tags and some in velvet gowns.
Exactly. Gave me the feeling that I was taking part in a story out of the Arabian Nights. I must say, though, I was pretty angry at the time. However, after a good night's rest, I feel quite differently this morning. I thought I'd just drop round and tell you all about it.
Glad you did, my dear fellow. It would be interesting to see if any repercussions of your strange adventure reach us.
Oh, I doubt it. The woman seemed frightened to death when I mentioned your name.
We shall see. Meanwhile, I'm expecting a client. You're not too busy. Perhaps you can stay.
No, I'd like to very much. Who is it? You know?
This telegram will tell you much more than I can. Arrived an hour ago.
Let's have a look. Be at your lodgings this morning to discuss our problem. Signed AMS. Pretty high-handed message. Be at your lodgings. Oh, please. What do you suppose AMS stands for?
I was just toying with that problem when you arrived.
Could it be the American Medical School?
No, no, there's no such body. It's the American Medical Association.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
The imperious tone of the message inclines me to believe that the A stands for amateur.
Very possibly. Amateur Masker Society.
For the amateur murderers. That would be a nice thought, wouldn't it?
Mm.
Ah, that is their representative now, no doubt, to save us further guesswork.
Holmes, it looks like the same carriage that I drove in last night. The girl standing on your doorstep dressed in the height of fashion. Mrs. Hudson's letting her in.
Splendid. It seems that we have not heard the end of your adventure. Go and meet the lady at the top of the stairs, will you, old chap, and save Mrs. Hudson's legs.
Right you are, Holmes. Thank you, Mrs. Hudson, thank you. All right, come in, madam. Want to come in?
Thank you, Dr. Watson. Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
At your service, madam. Won't you sit down?
I'm Lady Dorothy Brownlee.
It's your voice. You're the lady who fetched me last night, dressed up as a beggar woman.
Yes, I am, Dr. Watson. Forgive me for being so mysterious at the time.
Doubtless you have come to consult me regarding last night's unfortunate accident at the Amateur Mendicants Society.
How did you know what the initials stood for, Mr. Holmes?
Well, after hearing Dr. Watson's story of last night's happenings, the connotation seemed obvious. Am I right?
Perfectly. Mm-hmm. Last night, when Dr. Watson told us Julian was dead, we thought it was an accident.
And now you think it is murder, eh? Lady Brownlee, if you expect my help, there must be no more mystery. Just what is this Amateur Mendicant Society?
Well, I'm afraid it'll be a little hard for you to understand our motives. We're a group of people, rather wealthy people, I suppose, who find pleasure in deliberately leading a seamy life disguised as beggars. We use the basement that you were in last night, Doctor, as our headquarters. We keep our beggars' clothes there and change out of them before we go home.
Well, what a fantastic idea.
What a futile, worthless way of spending your leisure time, Lady Brownlee.
I suppose it must seem so, Mr. Holmes. But we're curious to learn how the other half lives. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's a certain thrill in rubbing shoulders with the police. At least we do some good.
Indeed. I should be interested to learn how.
All the money we make as beggars we give to charity.
Oh, do you really? And you feel that this gesture on your part absolves you from any responsibility to the real beggars whose livelihood you're impairing?
I hadn't thought of it just like that.
No.
Then I suppose you won't want to help us.
Oh, that's quite another matter, madam. As a professional detective, I cannot afford to be a moralist. Yes, I will investigate this case for you, though I warn you my fee will be an extremely high one.
Money isn't important, Mr. Holmes. As long as we can solve Julian's death without bringing the police into the case.
Lady Brownlee, who is the dead man? The man you refer to as Julian?
Julian Trapper, the poet.
Oh,
he was
yes.
The one who started our society. Mm-hmm,
yes, I think I've read some of his work. Decadent. Distinctly decadent.
Well, what makes you think that he was murdered, Lady Browner?
Well, after you left last night, Dr. Watson, there was a terrible scene. You remember Sidney Holt?
Oh, was he the big fellow who was so unpleasant to him?
Yes, that's the one.
Oh, do I remember him?
He said that he saw Lord Cecil deliberately trip Julian as he came to the head of the staircase.
Oh, Lord Cecil being...
Lord Cecil Dyrenforth, son of the Earl of Mersham.
Oh, yes.
There was a bitter argument. Cecil accused Sidney of doing the same thing.
Then they had a dreadful fight. It ended up with Cecil threatening to go to the police. But that's when we decided to send a telegram to you, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, yes, yes, I see. So the proof of murder depends on such flimsy evidence as to whether the dead man fell or, well, should we say, was pushed?
What it seems like.
Mr. Holmes, even though you don't approve, please help us, won't you?
Yes, Lady Brownlee, I will.
Will you come back with me now to our headquarters?
I shall join you within the hour. In the meantime, my old friend Dr. Watson can go with you.
But Holmes, what can I do without you?
You know my methods, old chap. Act accordingly.
Oh, very well, Mr. Holmes. But you promise you'll be there.
I promise you that I will be there, madam.
Thank you so much, Mr. Holmes. We'll be expecting you. Come on, Doctor.
Well, I'll just get my hat and coat.
Holmes, what are you up to?
Go with her and ask no more questions. I shall join you within the hour.
Holmes, there's a glint in your eye. I don't think you believe her story.
Of course I don't, Watson.
Well, then what?
Then go with her, old fellow, and keep your wits about you. The game's afoot.
And now back to tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure. The Amateur Mendicant Society, a group of wealthy eccentrics who pose as beggars, have come to Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson with a problem. One of their members has apparently been murdered, and the famous pair have been asked to investigate the killing. As we rejoin our story, Dr. Watson, still awaiting the arrival of the great detective, is cross-questioning three of the members at the headquarters of this unusual society.
I'm afraid that I don't find your stories very convincing.
Oh, don't you now? Well, then suppose you stop asking questions until Sherlock Holmes gets here. He's the man we've engaged to settle this business, not you. We're paying for his services, not those of his assistant.
Mr. Holmes asked me to conduct this preliminary investigation, my good man. I'm perfectly familiar with his methods. So keep a civil tongue in your head if you want us to continue with this case.
Well, I'm not answering any more questions till he gets here.
Insufferable fellow. Lord Cecil, you say that you saw Holt deliberately trip the dead man as he came down the stairs last night.
Yes, I did.
Well, where were you standing, sir?
At the head of the staircase. Holt was beside me, and as Julian came by, he deliberately...
Excuse me, please. Excuse me, number 11. Excuse me.
What is it?
There is a strange man just come in. He is dressed as you when you work, but I do not remember to have seen him here before. He speak very rough. Mm.
Did he give the correct signal?
Yes, and the password.
He must be a new member.
I suppose we better see him. Bring him in. Bad time for him to come here. Confound it.
This way, please.
Tommy. What a nice place you got here. Yeah, what a nice place. Certainly do yourselves proud, don't you?
Who are you, and how did you get in here?
I'll give you a signal and the password, just like Julian told me to.
Are you a friend of Julian?
Of course I am. You're coming to meet him here today.
Who are you, really?
Are we all friends here?
Yes, you can talk freely.
Then permit me to introduce myself. I am Don Luis José Fernando de las Torres at your service.
Why? Why do you want to join us?
When Julian tell me about it, well, it tickled my, how you say, my funny bone. It is a so charming idea, aficionados of mendicancy.
I suppose he's all right.
Of course I'm all right. Now, where is Julian, please? He will vouch for me.
He's in the other room. Is that an accident?
An accident? Not a bad one, I hope?
A very bad one. Dr. Watson, you better take him in there and break the news to him.
Very well. Follow me, sir.
This is terrible. Please, tell me what happened, Doctor.
I'm afraid you must prepare yourself for a shock, sir. Your friend is dead.
Dead?
His neck was broken last night in some brawl.
Yes, except that I do believe it was an accident, Watson.
Holmes!
Quiet, old chap, quiet.
But not quietly enough, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Come on, come back to the others and let all take a look at you. Come on, get moving, both of you. This isn't a pop gun in my hands.
Sorry, Holmes, I gave the whole thing away.
It's all right, old chap.
Oh, Cecil, Dorothy.
Yes.
Come here. I want you to take a look at the great Sherlock Holmes. Walked into our trap just like any stupid policeman. I know I had to dress up to do it, though, Mr. Holmes. We were waiting for you here anyway, you know.
Oh, I was well aware of that, Mr. Holt. You see, I knew I was walking into a trap.
How did you know that, Mr. Holmes?
Lady Brownlee, the story you brought to us today was so obviously a false one. Just as there is no amateur mendicant society.
Who are they, Holmes?
Go ahead, Mr. Holmes. Tell him. Let's see how much you really do know.
Yes, go ahead.
Why should I tell you what you already know?
Go on, talk, if you know what's good for you.
Oh, you're so persuasive, aren't you, Mr. Holt? Very well. Undoubtedly, Julian Trevor's death last night was an accident. You fetched the doctor, Lady Brownlee, a very natural move, and later discovered that the doctor in question was the old friend of Sherlock Holmes. Mm. We're all afraid that I would become interested in your unusual society until you invented that very thin story about the accident being a murder. You wanted to lure me here so that I could be disposed of, and you could all continue your nefarious works without hindrance.
Well, now aren't we clever? What is our nefarious work, may I ask?
Your password gave me a clue to the lanterns. Cry of the French revolutionists. They strung the aristocrats up on the lampposts. Then again, the combination of curious costumes and a luxurious establishment in a low-class area posed another question. What political belief provides a common meeting ground for misguided aristocrats and dangerous commoners?
And how did you answer that question?
Oh, very simple, my dear sir. One word. Nihilism. Its doctrine of assassination and overthrow of government would find every chance of being put into practice by all of you at the forthcoming Jubilee celebrations to be held here in London. And also would account for your beggar's clothes. A beggar would have greater freedom of movement in a crowd than an ordinary person.
You're a clever man, Mr. Holmes. Too bad you'll have to die. I'll get the rope.
What are you going to do with him?
Do? Give him a first-hand taste of nihilism, of course. You can't live. They know too much.
You can't possibly do this, you know. The police will track us here.
By the time the police get here, you and your friend Holmes will be blown to kingdom come.
Here's the rope,
Sidney. All right. Hands together, Mr. Holmes. That's it.
Ah! Oh, mind that bandit wrist of mine, will you? It's confoundedly sore.
Oh, isn't that a shame now? Is this any better?
Ooh.
Tie up the doctor, Cecil, while I bind Holmes' legs.
With pleasure.
I can't go through with this.
What do you mean, Dorothy? You can't go through it.
I just can't stand by and see two innocent men murdered.
But don't be a fool, Dorothy. We can't let them live. They know too much.
I don't care. If you go on with this, I'm going out for the police.
Why, you fool.
Ooh.
Tie her up as well, Cecil.
Leave me alone.
Sit down there beside him. Go on.
You're a devil, Sidney.
Oh, shut up. Now, Mr. Holmes, I'm going to fetch a little invention. A little invention I'm sure you'll be interested in.
Mr. Holmes, it's a pity you and your friend didn't learn to mind your own business.
I'm afraid it's too late to teach an old dog new tricks.
It's too late now, at any rate. Quite comfortable, Dr. Watson?
Don't you speak to me, sir. You're a filthy traitor to your country.
Rubbish.
Here we are. Example of Mikhail Petrov's mechanical genius. This bomb will blow the entire building sky high. The three of you with it. Now, I wind the time clock so. And we'll set the fuse to go off in 5 minutes. It'll give us plenty of time to get away. So.
Come on, Sidney, let's get out of here.
Right. Charming picture. Three of you bound hand and foot sitting beside each other on the sofa. Well, ta-da, Dorothy. Think of our cause during the 5 minutes. And as for you, Mr. Holmes, and your friend, good riddance to bad rubbish.
Well, Holmes, this looks like the end.
Right so, old chap.
I blame myself. If I hadn't been so infernally noisy when I recognized you, we wouldn't be in this mess.
Wasn't your fault, old fellow. I think they suspected me anyway.
Well, I must say, it seemed to me that you told them a great deal more than was necessary about your suspicions. Surely you could have pretended ignorance.
Oh, I suppose I could have done.
I can't die yet. I'm not ready to
courage,
die.
Courage, Brownlee, courage. And by the way, was I right in assuming that your associates are nihilists?
Of course they are. They're planning to assassinate the Prime Minister during the Jubilee celebration.
The Prime Minister, great heavens, Holmes, we've got to get free.
Assuming some miracle happened, and we did get free, and your former associates were arraigned in court, would you testify against them?
Oh, of course I would. But what chance is there of that?
If it bothers you that much, Lady Barry, I'll stop it for you.
Holmes, your hands are free.
Of course they are, my dear fellow. The bandaged wrist I mentioned just now concealed a razor-edged blade. I cut through the ropes almost before our friends had left the room.
Then why did you keep us in this suspense, Mr. Holmes?
I wanted to be quite sure that you'd testify in the forthcoming trial, madam. There we are. That renders the bomb harmless. Ah! And that means that the police have sprung the trap that I set to your associates, Lady Bramley. It's lucky for you that you had a change of heart and prevented you from leaving us.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, how could I ever thank you?
Holmes, you had the place surrounded with police when you came in here.
Of course I did, my dear fellow. Here, let me undo your ropes.
No wonder you were so calm. No wonder you told them so much. You wanted them to show their hands.
Precisely, old fellow. And they obliged me most satisfactorily. They attempted our triple murder. They are self-confessed anarchists, and with the evidence of Lady Brownlee, I'm sure that we can put them where they all belong.
Considering it's barely noon, I think you'll agree, Watson, that is a very comprehensive morning's work.
Doctor, tell the truth. Were you scared waiting for that time bomb to go off?
Scared, my boy? I was so scared that to this day I can't stand being in the same room with a loud ticking clock. Each tick of the clock seems to speak to me. Seems to say, tick-tock, this is the end. Tick-tock, this is the end.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is based on an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Five Orange Pips. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. This is Bill Forman saying goodnight for the Petrie family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Copyright 2020 by Timely Audio. All rights reserved.